disrupt the normal course of our program to go live to Lebanese capital Beirut, where Hezbollah Secretary General Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah is delivering a speech. Let's listen in.
With such a decision, why? Where is the Muslim and Arab world? They have no effect now. The Arab and Muslim world have no effect. They did make some slogans against this decision concerning the heritage sites, and the enemy expected this. The enemy never expected that the whole world would change and that the Arab world would work day and night and the Arab governments would announce the war and that the Arab people will go down on the streets in millions of numbers. Nothing of this, nothing happened. And the Israelis expected this. They expected a very small reaction. The enemy is behaving in this way, is taking our emotions lightly. Yesterday we saw what happened in the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and a very small number of the inhabitants of Al-Aqsa, these Palestinians, were protecting the sanctity of this mosque, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which concerns all of the Muslims. Only a small number of Palestinians sacrificed, 35 people were injured. But what do we see in the Arab and Islamic world as a reaction? Nothing. If we look at the experience, we find that yes, the Israelis do not fear the Arab and Muslim world, but only this small number of people, I say small number because we have 1,400,000,000 Muslims, but this small number of resistance groups in Palestine, in Lebanon, in the region, on the level of the people, on the level of the government, Syria and Iran, only these small sides are taken seriously by the enemy. And the enemy makes calculations and fears these people. The enemy makes threats and plans to confront these sides, confront these parties. Why? Because these countries, these governments and these factions which I mentioned are strength, represent strength, and they refuse to bow down and never feared death. And they requested to live in dignity. And these resistance movements were able to put an end to the collapse, to the situation of deterioration in the Ummah, which began ever since 1948, because the occupation of Palestine was one of the worst days of history for this Ummah. The humiliation and the deterioration stopped with these resistance factions, and on the other hand, we put a stop to this expansion of the Islamic and American hegemony in the region with the rise of these resistance factions. These resistance factions did not have any imaginary dreams, meaning they did not love life and fear death, and so hence they put a stop, they put a limit, and they designated the beginning of a new stage in the region, in the history of the region. And I would like to tell you, in all of the situations, all of the periods which we went through in the last few years, even in the last few months, the resistance factions in our region today are more faithful in their ideology and are more faithful in continuing to walk on the same direction which they walked in on previously, whatever the threats may be. This Ummah must take responsibility, and this Ummah cannot abandon the resistance factions by themselves on the battlefield. I'm not calling for the Arab Ummah to make us achieve victory. We never waited for anyone, nor will we wait for anyone to help us achieve victory. But this is the responsibility of the Ummah. We must remind the Ummah of its responsibility. Today, the resistance is in better shape than it ever was before, in Lebanon and in the region. And today, the resistance has popular support on the Arab and Islamic world, high popular support, and countries stand side by side in support of the resistance. When Syria or Iran stand in support of resistance in public very clearly, they announce their support, these countries. They announce their clear support, undoubtful support. And these countries are doing their duty, and they must be thanked. They must be thanked by all the countries of the Ummah, and the Ummah must take an example, must learn lessons from these two countries. This support of resistance factions by Iran and by Syria, this must not be a subject of criticism or of doubt. We must not express doubt towards these countries or criticize these countries. You know, today in some Arab countries and some Arab media outlets say that the Palestinian issue has become an Iranian issue. First of all, it has not become an Iranian issue. Second of all, you allowed it to go in this direction. Why don't you come and take it from the Iranians? Why don't you come and take it from the Iranians? Stand side by side with the Palestinian people like Syria and Iran are doing. Give the Palestinians and give the resistance factions in Palestine, give them what the Iranians are giving them. Support them the way Iran supports them and bring back this issue and say the issue is Arab and we'll stand with you, we'll support you. But first of all, take this responsibility. Today in the Arab and Islamic world, we see some Arab capitals which don't have the courage to meet in some of their hotels or in some of their halls. They don't have the courage to meet because they fear from Western or American criticism. But when the Islamic Republic of Iran says, come, let's meet, we are your brothers, we will help you, we will stand side by side in support of you, this is something which we should thank Iran for. All Arab peoples and all Islamic people, all Arab governments must thank Iran for this and not express doubt or criticize Iran for this. Within this context, I want to speak about another issue which concerns the threats against Lebanon and the issue of weapons, of course, smuggling weapons. Of course, the reaction to this last speech I made on Martyrs Day. You know, after the last speech I made on February the 16th, the threats backed down, of course, the escalated rhetoric backed down. We heard a new rhetoric. The rhetoric we heard after my last speech, for example, Shimon Peres said, no, we have left Lebanon forever, we have nothing to do with Lebanon, we don't want any trouble in Lebanon. He said the problem in Lebanon is that there are two policies and two armies. So we started to speak about the internal situation in Lebanon. Now, whether he's lying or not, that's a different story, but when we hear an Israeli official say that we left Lebanon forever, this is a confession to defeat, and I'd like to tell them that you left Lebanon and you will not be able to come back to Lebanon forever as well. Another person, another official, the Joint Chief of Staff of the Israeli military, says, no, we want to keep the calm situation on our now northern border. So I'd like to ask, why have these threats been continuing for 3 and 4 months, threat after threat? Now they say no, they want to maintain the calm on the northern Israeli frontier, and Netanyahu himself said, we don't want to wage a war, we don't want to wage a war against Lebanon or Syria or Iran or against Gaza. When he heard the reaction from the region, it's not just related to the stance in Lebanon, it's related to the stance by the Palestinians, by Damascus and by Tehran. He heard the reactions from Damascus, from Tehran, from Lebanon and from the Palestinians. They heard these very clear reactions. He found that the atmosphere is now different. And so they started to think again. Just as we took a very clear high stance, when we took this firm stance and we made a very clear firm reaction, the Israelis backed down and said, only if you take a step we'll react. And they said, we don't want a war, we want calm, we want a settlement. Of course, they're not doing anything to achieve a settlement, but when we face them with these threats, they back down. Of course, as our brother Sheikh Maher said before, this transformation did not occur because of words, but what is behind these words led to the transformation. The mujahideen who stand behind these words are what led to this transformation. Let's, if we speak in this way 100 times, this will not have an effect, but the credibility of any speech or any words which are said in Lebanon or from Gaza, from the Palestinian factions, or from Damascus, or from Washington, Tehran, the credibility of these words is different from the credibility of such words which were said years ago. The value of these words is that these words belong to the era of victory, the era of victory which came and put an end to the era of defeat. The Israelis know very well, the Israelis know very well that every single word which was said by the resistance forces would not have been said unless we were sure that we could achieve these aims which we spoke about. And what was said by the resistance in Lebanon and Palestine and Damascus and Tehran, what was said is just part of the story. It's not the whole story. Because we agreed at that night, we want to leave some issues to surprise the enemy. And we want to leave some issues for other occasions. So what we said previously is not the whole story. When I held my consultations with some of my colleagues who are concerned with the resistance, they told me, we have this idea, that idea. They proposed many ideas. And I said, if I speak about this on February 16th, what should I leave for May? What should I leave for the other occasions? So what I said on February 16th is not the whole story. So I must not speak about every single point in every speech. So the value of each speech, the value of the words which are said now, it's because of you. You are the value of these words which I say. You, the men, the women, the children, the religious scholars, the politicians, the mujahideen, the resistance fighters. The Israelis do not view the resistance today as a group of youngsters who are enthusiastic, who are taking up arms. No, the resistance today, the value of this resistance is that it is a big organized resistance which is capable and which has the support of its people, the support of its families, the support of its suburbs, of its villages, of its cities. This is the strong advantage of the resistance. Now, after speaking about this issue, the environment of the support of the resistance, the Israelis want to begin with a new movement in the region. It's become very clear to the Israeli side, and I think that you observe the Israeli media and their reactions. Of course, at the beginning, the very beginning days after my speech, they were quiet. But now the Israelis are saying very clearly that in any future war, nobody can achieve victory. Now, let's put us aside. They're speaking about themselves, I believe. They are saying that in any future war, nobody can achieve victory. So, as I said in the previous speech, the issue of decisive victory has been put aside. They've given up on this idea of achieving a decisive victory. Now, to go to war, I'd like to tell you once again, resorting to war is not a choice which has popular support in the Zionist entity. Of course, such a choice is very dangerous. So for this reason, the enemy must resort to other choices. Now they have two tracks. And I want to speak about these two tracks because it is required from us as Lebanese to be vigilant and to be aware. As political forces, as a government, as a country, as officials in Lebanon, we must be aware about what's going on. The first track is the track of political pressure, putting political pressure on Lebanon, on the Lebanese government. Of course, the stance of the Lebanese government is an excellent stance, and it expresses very clearly what we need in the upcoming stage. Of course, the stance of the Lebanese president, the stance of the Lebanese officials, these stances are very good. But now, these stances and these officials will be subject to pressure. Of course, the American ambassador in Lebanon went and visited the Lebanese prime minister, Lebanese parliament speaker, and the same messages were sent to Damascus, the same messages were sent to Tehran, and these pressures will continue. The pressure is what? How can we have in Lebanon a resistance which possesses weapons of deterrence? Now, Israel has the right to have hundreds of nuclear warheads, that's okay. and Israel possesses the most advanced military air force, that's okay. It has advanced American warplanes, that's okay. But for a popular resistance in Lebanon to possess weapons which could represent a deterrent, this is something which the American administration is against, and Europe will also take a stance against it, just as its passports were used to kill the martyr al-Mabhouh. So we will see movement by the ambassadors to Beirut and Damascus carrying messages of threats and pressure. Of course, we say this is all psychological warfare. What can they do? What can they possibly do? This is part of the American and Israeli way. Now, these pressures which we hear about in the media, every day we see the prime minister of the enemy, of the entity, and we hear a minister or the head of a municipality in Israel, they make these threats, but this has ended now, and we answered to these threats. Now they've begun with the other track, as I said, putting pressure on the governments. Now, I would like to tell you very clearly, so I won't go too long, the response, the quick response is that the message reached us hours before the meeting which was held in Damascus. And you saw the meeting in Damascus. The message reached Beirut and reached Damascus. And these messages from the Americans, as I said, they reached us. But I believe that the scene in Damascus and after that the scene in Tehran is enough to respond to all of the messages. The scene, of course, referring to the meeting between Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and the Iranian president and Syrian president. Of course, you know that in the Arab media outlets, some newspapers, of course, they said that there are divisions and disagreements between Syria and Iran, and that there are disagreements between Syria and the resistance in Lebanon. Of course, you heard all about this in the Arab media. These people continued to lie, make lie after lie after lie, and they even believe their own lies. But these lies have no true foundation, and I think the last few days proved that there is no truth to these allegations. Today, there is perseverance on the official level, and we need more perseverance on the official level. I can't agree, or we should not agree to this proposal. They say that this call for putting together a committee for national dialogue in Lebanon, as if this is answering to the request or bowing down to the demands of the West or to Ban Ki-moon. I don't think that this call is like a bowing down to the demands of the United Nations. We hope that the stance of the Lebanese officials, as it is by the Syrian and Iranian officials, we hope that the stance of the Lebanese officials will be a strong, solid stance which will answer logic by logic. It's not as if we are, of course, insisting on something. No, the Israelis today, who are putting pressure on, the Israelis are putting pressure on the Syrians. Of course, they are asking questions, why do you help the resistance in Lebanon? Why do you help the resistance in Gaza? There are other questions which should be raised. What prevents Israel from committing massacres and from violating the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the announcement of the Ibrahimi Mosque joining it to the Jewish heritage sites? Look at what happened in the last few days, the increased Israeli violations of Lebanese airspace. So who answers these questions about these Israeli acts or this Israeli behavior? So the strength of the resistance is based upon logic, is based upon a certain vision, it is based upon experience. The second track which they will work on is gathering intelligence information. And here I would like you to listen very well, because it's a detailed issue. The Israelis today have never stopped their intelligence war. The military war stops, and they stop their military operations, yes. But never, never did the Israeli intelligence war stop, whether it be against Lebanon or any other country. What happened in Dubai weeks ago is very clear, and is proof to this. And they are continuing with this war of intelligence. And day after day, we discover that some of the assassinations are the responsibility of the Israeli networks, that the Israeli networks have actually carried out these assassinations. Today, part of this war is gathering intelligence information. They want to know what does the resistance possess today? What kinds of weapons does the resistance have? They have some general information. Yes, of course, when we make speeches, they can understand that general idea. And when we speak on purpose. Of course, we hide some issues for surprises in future wars, but we must speak sometimes to prevent a war from occurring. We must speak about our capabilities to, of course, create this deterrence which would prevent a war. Some people ask a question, why did you make these threats? We make these threats because when the Israelis have a general idea of what we have, the Israelis will be hesitant to wage a war. We speak in this way because we don't want our country to be subject to a war. We want to prevent a military campaign against our country. So one of the ways to prevent a war against our country is to tell the Israelis, be careful, if you do this, we will do that. The second issue, as I said, is intelligence information. The Israelis will try and search what kind of weapons does the resistance have, the number of weapons, the quality of these weapons, how will they take advantage of these weapons, whether these weapons exist, who actually handles these weapons, who are the leaders of the resistance on the battlefield, because these leaders on the battlefield never appear on the media. Who knew Imad Mughniyeh, for example? Who knew him? His face. They used to hear about him, but they never knew him in person. The martyr Mahmoud al-Mabhouh, whoever knew him? These people work on the battlefield, and they are behind the scenes. So the Israelis want to search for them and get to know them. So to gather this information, and this is something very important for the Israelis, meaning that when the Israelis fail in gathering intelligence, this delays the war. But when the Israelis can gather the intelligence, this could lead to a war. I don't want to terrorize anyone, but I want to make everyone aware. Today, what is preventing the Israeli enemy, if the Israelis know very well what is going on, and if the Israelis know and really believe that in 3 or 4 hours they can bomb all of our weapons catches, this would make them go ahead and launch a war. But what prevents them from launching the war is that they don't know. They don't know the places or the capabilities of the resistance. They don't know the places where our weapons exist. This is the advantage. This is one of the advantages of a resistance. Now, when we speak about the defense strategy of a resistance in future dialogue sessions, this must be a point which we should stress on. But the Lebanese army, for example, has developed weapons, has of course professional generals, but this army, the weapons, the places of its weapons are known, and this army, the Lebanese army, will be clearly shown, clearly exposed to the enemy. Its tanks will be exposed to the enemy. What distinguishes the resistance from the army is that our capabilities are hidden. This is what distinguishes the resistance, and on the table of national dialogue we will address this matter. Now anyway, the enemy wants to gather information. We have the technical way of gathering information, and we have the human resources way. Technical way means reconnaissance flights or espionage, wiretapping, of course listening in to the cellular phones, listening in to the general phone calls. So wiretapping in general and overflights, this is the technical way of gathering intelligence information. Of course, the other way is human espionage, spying. Of course, spies who can give information in one way or another. This is something which we must confront, of course. Today, the Israeli espionage networks, yes, they are collapsing day after day, and here, I would like to refer to this issue, the issue of the spies and the issue of the reconnaissance flights. Concerning the spies, I would like to speak to all of those who are still dealing with the enemy, the remaining spies, those who could be called and could be bought in order to deal with the enemy and collaborate with the enemy, because they will visit the village and the city, and they will visit their neighbors, and they will meet with their teachers in the schools and universities. They will meet with different people. So where can the Israelis come and recruit spies. They can come anywhere. As I said, they can come to the schools, they can come to the cities, to the villages. I'd like to tell those who might become spies that what you do is not just a murder. This is betrayal. Betrayal against the whole ummah. Betrayal against your fellow citizens. So these people must be vigilant. They must be aware of the aftermath of this world. They must be aware that they are doing wrong to their own people, doing wrong to their own wives, to their sons and daughters, mothers and fathers. So these people must think before they take any steps towards spying and collaborating with the enemy. And I call on them now to take lessons, to learn the lessons of the past. All those who collaborated with the Israelis before, what happened to them? Those who were uncovered, of course, what happened to them? They are either homeless, they are either in prison. What did Israel do for them? Did they help them? Is Israel committed to liberating them from prison? No. Israel is never helps these people. So don't they learn the lesson? Dealing with the enemy is a loss for them in this world and in the aftermath. And on the personal level, what happens except prison and torture and homelessness? And the day must come whereby, and as I said in the previous years, once again I call for implementing the death penalty against those who were convicted of spying and convicted that their spying actually caused killing of Lebanese people. These people who have been convicted and whose judgment has been the death penalty, this death penalty must be implemented. So I call on these people to back down from this, to abstain from such acts, because they will be subject to more discovery. They will be subject to the uncovering of the Lebanese security services. I called before for cooperation with the Lebanese security services. I call once again, I call for more collaboration with the Lebanese security services, and I'd like to tell you, God willing, more Israeli espionage networks will be discovered in the future. The future of these espionage networks is a dark future, but these people must know that they are ignorant and they will be judged. And as I said, the verdict which will be passed, if the verdict is a death penalty, this verdict must be implemented. And I would like to refer to what was mentioned by the As-Safir newspaper concerning the U.S. Embassy, that the U.S. Embassy is sending, U.S. Embassy in Beirut, of course, is sending messages to some security institutions in Lebanon or some ministries, and they are requesting, the U.S. Embassy is requesting information and requesting many different issues. Now, we don't know the magnitude of this file until now. I think that the parliamentary committee and the Lebanese parliament should be preoccupied with this matter, and they should uncover the details of this subject. Of course, they describe this as a dangerous issue because it's a violation of Lebanese sovereignty. I do agree, this is dangerous and it's a violation of Lebanese sovereignty. But there's something even more dangerous than this violation of Lebanese sovereignty. There are some Lebanese and Arabs. Are there some Lebanese or Arab people who believe that all of the information which the U.S. Embassy has doesn't go to Israel? Of course, all the information which the U.S. Embassy gathers in Beirut reaches Israel. Here we're not speaking about a normal foreign embassy which is gathering information for its own government. Yes, this is a breach of our sovereignty, okay. But when it comes to the American Embassy in Beirut, it's a different story. Because of the close, special, strategic relations between the U.S. and Israel, all the information, all the data, all of the archives, all of the clear detailed information, all of the names, everything which reaches the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon, whether it is gathered by networks which are related or tied to the U.S. Embassy, or which is given to the U.S. Embassy by Lebanese institutions, all this information reaches the Israelis. And so what is given to the U.S. Embassy and what reaches the Israelis, the information, All of this leads to the destruction of Lebanon. This helps the Israeli enemy to understand what is going on in Lebanon, to use this information against Lebanon and to take revenge against our country. So it's not just an issue of violating our sovereignty. It's more than this. It's more dangerous. This is giving information, giving free information to the Israeli enemy, information free of charge. What's the difference between espionage networks which give information directly or giving information by mediation, meaning giving it to the US embassy who hence gives it to the Israeli side? And we know that information which reaches the US embassy is given to the Israelis. We hope that in Lebanon there will be no side which is involved with the US embassy in such behavior. We hope no Lebanese institution is involved in this. And we don't want this country to go into internal divisions because of any matter. No, we don't want this at all. But if this actually exists in Lebanon, it is extremely dangerous. And we need to highlight this, because this does not only concern the security of Hezbollah or the resistance or the security of one person, it means the security of the whole country. Today, the country is under the threat of Israel, is being threatened by Israel, is being targeted by Israel. Israel wants this country to bow down. So how can we take such an issue of the US embassy lightly? So anyway, my dear brothers and sisters, God willing, we will continue to walk on this direction which God gave to us. We will continue to walk on the direction of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. We want to continue to walk on the path of martyrdom and jihad and sacrifice and responsibility and dignity. We will continue to walk on this road, and as my colleague said before, in his name, in the name of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, our resistance was founded and our resistance will continue, and the aims of liberation will be achieved. I would like to congratulate you on this occasion of the Prophet Muhammad, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.